Morning, we'll call the meeting of the Property and Local Tax Division to order, and looks like we can all call ourselves true Minnesotans, hearty Minnesotans this morning. And we have a quorum, so pretty amazing. Let's see. Representative Doubt moves the minutes of the last meeting.
Yes.
Any discussion? All right. Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Minutes approved. Okay, business of the day here, in all the cases we're going to, all the bills we're going to look at, we will want to pass them on and take a vote. I guess we can vote right away. We thought we wouldn't have a quorum, but we'll be voting on them and moving them on to the tax committee. Let's see. Our first bill that we'll be hearing is House File 2283. Representative McElfatrick. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Great. And I'll move House File 2283 for you. And you want to tell us about your bill?
All right. Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate your hearing my bill this morning. I'm here speaking on behalf of a very small town in Aiken County, Tamarack. They have had a serious ongoing problem with their sewer system. They acted on rather poor advice from a USDA engineer and installed a sewer system that was not appropriate for their needs. And then subsequently, the contractor that installed the system declared bankruptcy, and it left the town with a substandard system that was not only inappropriate for the town, but also prone to perpetual breakdowns. Now, for years, the town has really struggled with this system to keep it running. The monthly charge per hookup was underrepresented to them before the system was installed, you know, counting it on the low side, and they have been forced to continue to raise their monthly rates. This is difficult for the town. They have, at the last census, a population of 94 and an average per capita income of $19,000, just a tad over $19,000. A quarter of the town hookups are already delinquent on their monthly fees. The town has actually done a remarkable job, all things considered. The loans are paid off, and I think that's really to their credit. However, the operational costs are consuming all of the city's finances, and even with that, they have a monthly shortfall, I'm sorry, an annual shortfall of between $9,000 and $15,000. So, you know, they're putting everything in. The reserves for the town are nearly exhausted, and if they don't get some kind of relief, the town will declare bankruptcy before the end of this calendar year. This is a situation where a town acted on advice that should have been reliable and apparently was not, and then had the misfortune of hiring a contractor that did a poor job. Despite their best efforts to carry their own weight, and I commend them for that, it just simply isn't possible for them to continue. I think there are rare situations in which the state has a responsibility to step in and provide relief for its people in unusual circumstances. The dollar amount is modest, but it would give them a measure of relief so that they can, first of all, prevent going into bankruptcy and give them a chance to kind of step back and begin to prepare for the inevitable, which is the need for a replacement system that will come up in a few years. It's not all that far away. Now, I have the Aiken County Administrator, Patrick Wesso, here with me today, and he has some additional information and would be able to answer questions that perhaps I would not be able to.
Very good. Welcome, Mr. Wesso, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representatives, I am Patrick Wesso, the Aiken County Administrator. Been with the county for about 5 years. When I first took the position, I took the responsibility to meet with each of the townships and each of the cities. That included meeting with the city of Tamarack. In 2007, they were discussing their rate issues and this annual shortfall that Representative McElfrick talked about. The fact of the matter is the current mayor was on the city council. He worked hard to convince the other members to raise their rates. At that time, there was still blame on the USDA, on public financing, not having enough dollars to resolve their situation. However, recently, last fall, Representative and myself were at their meeting, and they were able to increase their rates to start addressing their shortfall. I would like to talk about the fact that this facility was installed in the 1990s. The individual that did the work worked on a variety of communities in Aiken County, and they each had similar problems. This was not a one-case situation. Just in the last 2 years, we were able to resolve another community south of Tamarack and have their situation resolved. However, that used up the last of the PFA dollars, and that was done through Senator Saxout. The land in question is very flat here. There are a lot of wetlands. Homeowners actually would have been better off if they had not installed the system, if not for the urging of the USDA. Some of the other important facts are, I do note, I've been working with Senator Saxhaug's office, and he does have a similar bill proposed in the Senate, and so there, it is noted that it is a bipartisan support. The county board discussed this issue at their meeting yesterday and fully support this action, and we'd be willing to answer any questions that you may have.
Is there any discussion from the members? Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the PFA typically comes through one of the other committees that I sit on, so I've actually followed this whole thing up in Aiken County. What was the cost? Just so, because Madam Chair, last Wednesday we had the small cities.
Charles Marone.
Yes.
Strong cities, strong towns.
Strong towns, strong cities, whatever it was. And this is really an example of it. So my question is, do you know the cost of what the system, when it was installed?
Representative McElfector?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the information that was given to me last year when I first became aware of this is that they had spent approximately $1.5 million on the system.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, was that the town or was that the USDA or the U.S. taxpayers?
Well, I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I did not ask exactly where all the dollars came from. I just asked where it had come from, and I was told it was through grants.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, this system obviously needs to be replaced. It was 2.5, and it was actually a little bit more than that from what I was able to glean from PFA records and comments about it. So we're about $3 million to put the system in, about another $3 million to replace it, which it's going to have to be replaced in the next 10 years. And this $12,000 is really ongoing, because it's until the system is replaced. This is a prime example of what we were talking about on Wednesday. So, what's the city to either of the two testifiers? What's the plan to replace this in 10 years? Are you coming back here for $2.5 million? Because this totally was a grant. This was entirely paid for by federal tax dollars to put this in. And my expectation is that it's going to be paid for with federal tax dollars a second time. And,
yep. And Representative and members, the bill is just for 2 years. So there is nothing ongoing in the bill, just to clarify that. But Representative McAfee, did you want to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, what I am looking for is an opportunity for the town to just kind of get almost a respite, because they are aware that they need to start planning for the future. They've been in conversation with the PFA on that, but right now this situation is so immediate that this is what I'm addressing now.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the guesstimates that I've heard is $3 to $3.5 million minimum to replace this system. And I believe, I looked up the census tract too. There's 30 houses in the town. About 30 houses for about $3 million of a sewer system that we're going to have to replace within the next 5 to 10 years. I think this really highlights what we heard last Wednesday. The $12,000 certainly is a stopgap measure. And it may be in the bill just for this year or next year. But the town can't afford to maintain the system, period. So now they got a federal system, and they're going to have the state pay for it to maintain it. It's a full example of what the chair brought forth last Wednesday.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. We do agree. And Representative McFadden, did you have any further comments on that?
Well, just a brief comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. That the initial information that the town got from the engineer really directed them into a system that was just too big for the town. And so as they look forward to the next system, they will look at something that's far more appropriate for them. So that's going to be part of the work.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, Representative McPatrick, the system, Tamarack is built on a swamp. You can't do septic systems. You can't, and it's built on a swamp, and you can't do a pond system. You know, there's no other system that's appropriate for this particular town. So for you to come here and ask for us to maintain a system that doesn't work, that was paid for by the tax dollars, and there's absolutely no plan for the next 20 years of any kind of system that they could put in, much less how to pay for it, kind of begs to a question, but I won't ask it.
Okay. Representative Benson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Most of the questions that I had have already been addressed, but it is clear that this is a one-time proposal. And we can be confident we would not see this request coming back in 2 years. Can we be on record for that?
Representative McElfactrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My goal with this bill is just the one time.
All right, thank you. Representative Benson, anything else?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious if the town of Tamarack receives LGA currently, and if so, how much?
Let's see. I wonder, Ms. Dalton, perhaps you'd have an answer for us.
Madam Chair, it does receive LGA. I'm afraid I actually not carrying my run today. I kind of
you don't have the number in your head, huh?
I got here very late, and I didn't pick up all of my materials at my office.
Madam Chair.
Right. Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you. Paid LGA in 2010 was $2,789.
Okay. All right. Okay. Do you have other testifiers then on this, Representative?
Madam Chair, no, I do not.
Okay. Are there other folks that wish to testify before or on or against the bill? Okay, well, seeing none, I'd like to think we're ready to vote. We want to move this to taxes, so if there's no further discussion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, so we're moving Senate file House File 2283 to taxes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Wasso. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Mahoney, Representative Markworth.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, is there an intent this year to have a division omnibus bill, or will you be passing all the individual bills out of here into taxes?
Representative Markwart, our plan is to pass them on to taxes for, a larger omnibus bill.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, there's no plan then to have a division report?
No, there's not.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, Representative, and thank you, Mr. Wasso, as well. All right. We are looking at House File 1954, Representative Downey. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I will move for you House File 1954. And I don't know if you're presenting the bill then. And
yes, Madam Chair. And then I know there's one testifier that wanted to kind of bring some of their activities that led up, at least in part, to the thinking on the bill. But I'm glad to describe the bill and then let testifiers come forward before discussion.
Very good. Please proceed.
Sure. 1954 is a pretty straightforward bill, members, and what you're having passed out at your desk is my 20-minute spreadsheet interpretation of what we're asking local governments to be able to present. Right now, there, I think, is a bit of a disconnect between citizens and local governments in terms of the average person really knowing what's going on at the local government level in terms of their spending. And so this bill attempts to part the clouds and put a very straightforward report, spreadsheet-type report, in the hands of every citizen at the point that the local governments are certifying their levies in September. And I know we have a very extensive truth in taxation process that, frankly, many of us would agree is broken in quite a few ways, not the least of which is that the truth in taxation hearings occur after the November elections, when people would probably be most inclined to pay attention and show up at events and things before the election. And then in addition to that, while the truth in taxation reporting requirements are pretty extensive and they involve comparative things that are being pushed up to the Secretary of State and the like and producing very nice documents for the taxpayers, most of that is really geared towards a public sector finance professional. And I know in my community, we produce a very beautiful, I mean, this is really good stuff. I'm not critical at all of it. It's great. You can get down to the gnat's eyelash of detail on programs and spending, but it's a big report, and the average person just isn't going to plow through all of this. There's some nice narrative on the front end that talks about the strategy and where the city sees itself going. And so it's not as though it's not helpful, but it's a lot, and I don't think people are really able to digest this in a very simple, easy-to-use format like what I've presented in front of you. So the bill would require cities or counties with the population greater than 2,500 to provide this kind of a very simple presentation. And there's two key elements to it. The first is that you would see the city spending by program, which is a pretty typical view in most reports to citizens. And then you'd also see it by expenditure type, or if you're a finance person, what's called object code down in the general ledger chart of accounts. So you'd see kind of the intersection of the program spending and then what is actually driving the spending increases in the city or the spending decreases in the city and then or county. And then importantly, showing it over a three-year period, a two-year look back, the current year, and then 1 year into the future. And that future year creates a set of challenges for the local government. So I'm working with them on some provisions. We amended the bill in state government that would say they don't have to produce the detailed breakdown in the future looking year, that they could just put the total certified levy and budget amount. I know they have some concerns about that and the timing of that and the fact that they're still negotiating contracts. So we're still in some discussion with them as to the reasonableness or possibility of putting that future year out there. But this kind of picture is what we're asking the local governments to put up on their website or to distribute manually. And my sense is that if this information came out before the November election in a very nice, concise, easy-to-read format, that would be of significant value to taxpayers. And I know there's a lot of debate, a lot of noise out there in the last few months as governments were certifying their local governments were certifying their levies about the tax increases and where they came from and who caused them. And there's one piece of information that people never really seem to have, and that is, what are our local units of government spending? Not what are the tax levies and the tax rates and the capacity and all these other kind of arcane things that tax committees and tax professionals like, but what are our cities actually spending their money on? Two logical views of that I think could be really helpful. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm glad to answer some immediate questions or go to testifiers as you wish.
All right, Representative Downey. I have to just say, I want to thank you for bringing this bill, actually, but I honestly don't understand here the first comparisons of columns from 2009, how there would be such a different total spending. Maybe I should be able to understand that, but what's behind it? What aren't we seeing in the by-program list of expenditures?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if I understand the question, but the numbers that are in the spreadsheet, I literally did this format in about 20 minutes before my first committee, and I just slammed some numbers in so you could see hopefully how the interactions would work.
Okay.
Not that this is actually a sample of an actual community, so if the numbers are incoherent, that's because I just crunched some numbers in so you could see the calculations.
Did you open it?
All right. Okay, we do have some questions. Representative Crawford?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. We'll have some additional testimony, evidently. Then, I have representative from NIOP is here to testify. Good morning, Ms. Rackow, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kay Rockel, and I am the Director of Public Policy for NIOP, the Commercial Real Estate Development Association, representing the interest of commercial real estate developers, owners, and managers, along with the thousands of tenants that are in the buildings we own and manage. And NIOP has been focusing its time and energy on business property taxes, particularly in the property tax reform area. And we have been pretty consistent on working over the years on working to keep commercial and industrial property taxes down. But lately, we've been starting to focus our time and energy on the local level. And we actually formed a task force under the direction of the board, and with the direction from the board, find out what are the cost drivers in local government and what causes property taxes to go up. So we had about 15 people on this committee, ordinary people, and we got together and we met sometimes every other week. We heard from city managers, county commissioners, mayors, council members, tax assessors, labor negotiators. We spent time with House Research. We spent an hour and a half getting smart about LGA. And the intent was to understand Minnesota's complicated property tax system and also the complicated relationship between state and local government finance. And so we became very aware of the non-property tax revenue sources and how the increase and decrease can have an impact on local budgets. But we decided that the most important part of the property tax system was the spending on the local level. And it's also the most difficult for taxpayers to get their arms around. So, and that became real clear to us when we started to look at local budgets. We thought it would be really pretty simple to understand quickly and easily what the cost drivers were and what was causing a need for additional revenue. And that's when we realized that it was difficult for us to do that because, as Representative Downey says, local governments are traditionally organized by program area. So you can tell how much is spent on police, public safety, park and rec, general administration, etc. And underneath each one of these program areas, in some cases there's incredible expenditure detail, sometimes as much as 30 different line items. Other cities lump them and group them together in broad categories. But the one thing we did notice is that we couldn't find anybody, and what we're asking for is an aggregation of expenditure types across all of those program areas. So what we're asking for, we asked to have this handout put in your packets. Looks like this in the front. I'm going to make sure you got it. All right, well, look at this page right here. The top two charts is typically what you find in local budgets. Here's a pie chart that shows the program areas and the percentage of the budget that they occupy, and then across on the top on the other side, you will see a little more detail on those program types. What we're asking for is to have two charts added to the budget presentation. One that shows this same budget by expenditure code, which is the pie chart on the bottom, then across the way it shows the expenditure types in a little bit more detail. And we're asking for 8 expenditure categories to be added to the local budget via the two charts we show on the bottom. because as important as it is to understand the program areas and how much money is being spent on the services we ask for, we think it's also important to understand cost by expenditure code. And as you know, local government is the service provider, so naturally one of the biggest costs will be labor. And we think it's important for taxpayers to understand this important element of their budgets in a little bit more detail. And as we've had hearings on this bill at the Capitol over the course of the last few weeks, many legislators have asked cities and counties if this information is available upon request. And they all say that if a taxpayer calls up and asks for this information, they can make it easily available to them. So what we're asking is that cities and counties be proactive and provide these two additional charts as a complement to their programs, their program budget, when they present their budgets to the public. And this would give taxpayers a much more clear, quick understanding as to what's going on with their local budgets. And we listened to a presentation that was put on by the Humphrey Institute, as engaged by the League of Minnesota Cities, asking the Humphrey Institute to project the fiscal futures of Minnesota cities. And it was alarming when we read that report and we heard the presentation on that. And it kind of gave us a little bit more impetus for us as taxpayers to understand a little bit more clearly how our tax dollars are being spent on a local level. And I just want to say what this bill is not. It is not a replacement for traditional program budgeting. We just want two charts added that show expenditures. It is not designed to force or ease comparisons between jurisdictions. This information is available in a jurisdiction for the taxpayers in that jurisdiction. We're not asking for standardized accounting procedures. We're not asking for new expenditure codes. We're not asking for new expenditure types. We just want the local jurisdiction to add these two particular charts to their traditional budget presentation. And we also recognize that this by any means is not the be-all and the end-all for us to understand property taxes. This, in our opinion, is just the step to give taxpayers a better understanding of local cost drivers and cost structures. And I appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Racco. Any questions? Thank you very much. All right, we'll go on to, I'm sorry, was your hand raised?
After this one.
Okay. Representative Kisselishin. I'm sorry, Mr. Kisselishin. I believe we have your testimony next. Good morning, welcome, and introduce Thank yourself you. For the tape, please.
My name is John Kisselishin. I served as mayor in the city of Roseville from 2000 to 2004. I've been involved in city government for about the past 15 years. I've observed 11 budgets, participated in two as an elected member, and managed two more as an elected member. Also, I spent 3 years serving on a League of Minnesota Cities Policy Committee in the past. Now, I'm here to support this bill because it sets reasonable and basic standards for information reporting. I do not believe that this is an administrative burden. Government should already be tracking this information for benchmarking purposes. I believe that what this will do is simply organize information that already exists. I kind of look to it as being similar to like a legislative fiscal note. So there'll be just a standard policy, a standard document from city to city and county to county. Now, providing information to the public is something that we expect in a democratic form of government, and of course there's always a small cost. But I can tell you that in this case, the software that you would need to put together a report like this is something that I personally have at home, and I presume that a lot of people would have this type of software, and certainly a city or a county would. Now, as a website developer, I can also tell you that I could post 1,000 years worth of these reports on a website for less than $5 a month. So there's very little to no cost in that area. Now, there's a question that has been raised on timing requirements. In my opinion, you cannot make an informed budget decision if you do not have the information that's asked here by September. When I ran the budget process in Roseville, we started in March and we knew the levy amount by May. And that's when we started developing the budget. In my city, we've even talked about doing a two-year budget similar to what cities do in Washington State, what some cities do in Washington State. So The last point here is the bill moves us in a direction of having basic information that lets citizens and elected officials do several things. First, we've talked about how it gives citizens a summary sheet about their government budget. I don't think you can expect citizens to make informed comments at truth and taxation meetings without having some basic, easy-to-read information on their government budget. Now, second, for people like myself that like to do a more in-depth analysis, I would find this very helpful because it would allow me to start the process of doing an apples-to-apples comparison from city to city. I mean, for example, you can't figure out a comparison between the fire departments in New Hope and Roseville if you don't even have an idea of how much it costs to run these departments in the first place. I'm also happy to see that there appears to be no restrictions on a city being able to add information to this report. Now, the question of unfunded mandate is always talked about. Well, in my opinion, this is about as much of an unfunded mandate as asking a city police department to enforce the .08 law or requiring a county board to take meeting minutes. No one has to buy any new accounting software, systems, or anything like that. Government already has the tools. I also think it's unreasonable to expect citizens to individually file public information requests and dig through inch-thick budget documents in order to figure out what's going on. If I wanted to do a cost comparison of police departments in 20 different cities, I can tell you that I would have 20 different processes in each of the 20 different cities to try to get that information. It would probably take me weeks to gather that type of information. This here at least provides a process where I can get some basic information in a reasonable amount of time. Now, I'm hoping that this bill will also allow the inclusion of sources of revenue, because I believe most people would be surprised to find out how much of a city budget is actually collected through user fees and how little local government aid actually affects the budgets of most cities. I'm pleased the bill focuses on employee salaries and government employee costs, because I can't speak for state or federal government, but at least at the city level, we're dealing a lot with services. The bulk of services are employees. That's where the bulk of the costs are at the city level. So to conclude, I support the bill because it calls for a simple, uniform, easy-to-read budget information process here, and I think it will help elected officials and citizens in communities across Minnesota. And with that, Madam Chair, I stand for questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Kiselishin. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay. We do have on the list a couple of opponents. Mr. Carlson. Morning, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I want to start off by saying that cities and counties do not have any objections to providing whatever information that is desired in a manner that fits when that information is actually available, and that's consistent with the current processes of which we report this information. As you'll see as I go through this presentation, we present an extraordinary amount of information right now, and frankly, I would take the position that Minnesota property taxpayers are probably the best informed in the nation. I do want to start off with just making a couple observations in response to some comments that suggest that first truth in taxation is broken. While local governments do have an extraordinary concern about the cost of truth and taxation, I don't think that the information that's provided to the taxpayer and their failure to show up at our hearings is an indication that the process is broken. Rather, I would suggest to you that most taxpayers are just satisfied with the cost of the services that they're receiving currently and consequently are not motivated to show up at the hearings because they're pleased with the services they're provided at the cost that they incur. Secondly, I think there's sort of an inference that somehow property taxes, local government spending is out of control. Going to my presentation then, that's simply not the case. Unlike other taxes in Minnesota, property taxes in Minnesota are below the national average. Whether you look at it at a per $1,000 of personal income basis or per capita basis, We are below the national average. Going on, frankly, I think the commercial industrial property owners' concerns are somewhat misplaced because the majority of their tax is really dictated by the state, not by local governments. I've showed on page 3 of my handout the average effective tax rate in Minnesota right now is 1.43%. That's tax divided by market value. For commercial industrial property, that same rate happens to be 3.7%. The difference is all a matter of state law. At least 1.1% of that difference is simply the matter of the state property tax that local governments have nothing to do with. Okay, going on to our specific concerns with this legislation, first, the required timing of the reports cannot be facilitated in many instances. The implementation will be challenging, particularly for smaller cities and counties. As I said, cities and counties already report extensive information at substantial expense, and we are frankly somewhat baffled about how imposing additional unfunded mandates on us will provide further inform the citizens. And finally, if the focus is on compensation, as it appears to be, that information is already reported to the state auditor. It's just not published by them. If that's the concern, then I think the mandate should be made placed on the state auditor to report what we already sent to them. In terms of the required timing, contrary to testimony, previous testimony, local governments don't have the details of their budget on September 30th when we're required to publish this information under current law. All we have done by September 15th when we set our levy for truth and taxation is set a ceiling on what we're going to spend overall. We literally do not know the details. Basically, city councils, county boards go through the detail of those budgets between then and their November, December truth and taxation hearings and subsequent adoption of their budgets to fill out those details. We don't have the information that's necessary to be provided here. It is a very extraordinary effort by counties and cities, as well as school districts, special districts, to just meet the truth in taxation levy certification requirement. And the interim in between is a very time-demanding period, particularly for smaller cities and counties where the city clerk or the county auditor may be the budget person, as well as the administrator of elections, and in the county's instance, also the individual whose office is preparing the truth of taxation statements. As I said, implementation will be challenging for particularly smaller cities and counties. Testimony that has been given on this bill to date has all been given by larger cities, by larger counties that have full-time, dedicated financial staff. The smaller cities, smaller counties, the individual who isn't concerned with the budget has, like I said, multiple duties. We, the local government representatives, had a conference call with local officials last Friday, and we, you know, received information from them that said we just can't do this at the present time with the capacity that we have in terms of staffing. One thing, now going on to the expense of this that has not been mentioned, is for those cities that do not have a website, they are required to publish this information in a newspaper. That's additional expense. There's obviously expense, at least in staff time, if not in engaging the third party that may be helping the city maintain its website and putting it up on the website if the city does have a website. As I said, Truth in Taxation gives probably the most extensive information to property taxpayers in the nation, and it's quite costly. In 2007, when the Department of Revenue was required to do a report on this, they found the cost of Truth in Taxation was over $3 million annually. The cost has gone up since then because mailing costs have gone up since, a major component of the cost of that system. As I said, we all, both cities and counties already report substantial amount of information on both their budgets and their actual audited revenues and expenditures. We are required to report summary budget data to the state auditor on January 31st of every year. She posts that on our website. Similarly, we also are required to provide her our audited financial statements 180 days after the close of our financial year. That information is also published. In addition, on her website, she provides a tool where you can do per capita comparisons of those expenditures and revenues. So there's already extensive information. Besides the information that we report to the state auditor, we are required at the county level to publish summary budget statements as well as our financial statements at substantial expense.
Excuse me, Mr. Carlson, we just want to make sure we get the other testifiers up. So
I'll just close up. The cities are have similar requirements. If they have a citywide newsletter, they can do that. Finally, again, as I said, if compensation is the focus here, we already report that information to the state auditor. We're happy to report that along with our budget information. Right now, we only report it as part of our audited financial statements. But again, at timing consistent with what we do right now, so the true amount of what we spend and revenues, if that's desired, is known. We simply do not know it on the timeline that's required under this bill. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to
answer
any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Other questions? Do we have Representative Crawford?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Carlson. On page 3 of your testimony, you say the state and not local government is most responsible for the CI property tax burden. There's a bill, I think it's House File 1914, don't hold me to that, where we would eventually eliminate the state portion of the CI property tax. If that was enacted and signed, what effect would that have on the effective rate?
Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, Representative Crawford, that would basically address the gap that's shown between the 3.7 and 2.6% in present terms.
Thank you very much.
Representative Doubt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Carlson, I appreciate your testimony and I appreciate the work you're doing on behalf of counties. I wanted to take a little issue, and I hesitate to do that with one of the items that you said about counties not having this information by September 15th. And I thought that I would take just a minute to share my own experience in working with county government. In my time as a commissioner, we started our budget process in June, and we started with a book that was, I don't know, inches thick, probably 300 or 400 pages, and it was far more detailed than this, right down to the, you know, line item on what the money was being spent on. And, you know, we worked through the process until we got to that September 15th deadline, and while you're correct about the September 15th deadline setting a ceiling, we got there using line item information, and we shaved that down and narrowed that down. And I know it's certainly possible that my county is the exception, and others may start with, you know, the end number they're targeting, and then try to get there after September 15th. But that seems like it might not be the most responsible way to approach that. So my experience has been that we certainly had that information, although very often we would refine that information after the September 15th deadline. But I certainly think the information is available at that time, and you know, I think that it provides a level of transparency to a resident who actually wants to impact what's going on and have some input in the process before the final deadline that happens the last week in December. So the opportunity to have that information reported September 15th really involves the resident to have an ability to contact their local elected officials. If we wait until the real numbers are official in December, it's too late. You can't make changes after that. So I just wanted to point out that clarification. And thank you, Representative Downey, for bringing the bill.
Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, if I can just clarify my responses on it. I agree, for the larger counties, this would not be a challenge, although I have to caveat it. It's preliminary, as Representative Dowd indicated. The final numbers are not known until the budget's adopted. Again, I can only represent what we heard in the conference call we had with officials representing both small and large last Friday. And the smaller entities said they simply could not provide this information at this time without, you know, additional investments in staff or software resources.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Carlson, for your testimony. It's interesting because this is the kind of thing, I'm looking at Representative Downey's spreadsheet, this is the kind of thing I do for a living, and I've done it for about 20 years, and so I understand the complexity in making information simple and easy to read. And so in my opinion, it's really not about producing more information. It's about producing more concise information that people can understand. Not that people aren't smart enough to understand the 50 or 100-page document that Representative Downey produced. It's just a matter of people wanting concise information that's quickly and easily accessible. And so that's why this information is so important, so people can make decisions about what happens to a budget on a county board from 2009, 10, and 11. And even if it's not final, I think it's very important, as I do every year, we produce information like this starting in June or July that shows estimated 2012 budget. And then we move from there. So it's a process, and I think if people can be involved in that process through quick and easy information, I think that just helps with the transparency. Regarding the mandate, I don't know what every county has to do to record expenses in a certain way. I think that supplies and purchase services and employee costs are already documented through a general ledger account. So I don't think that would be that much of a burden. Can you explain exactly which burden you're referring to? Are you referring to creating the spreadsheet, or are you referring to creating new general ledger accounts? I'm not quite sure where the burden resides.
Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, Representative Dowd, you know, basically, again, we're not against providing this information, but again, at a time where the information is known with certainty and presenting it in a manner consistent with our current reporting. If this would be changed, that we would provide this as information that we currently report to the state auditor, we'd have no problem with that. If you would say that we have to provide the summary information, which frankly many cities and counties already do, as part of the budget documents that they currently prepare for both their internal use as well as for presentations at truth and taxation hearings, again, we'd have no problem with that. It's the timing and the additional publication requirement that we object to. Again, the smaller cities, the smaller counties, which frankly aren't my members, but I do have to represent their concerns, don't necessarily have the staffing to do this. Anoka County, which is one of my members and is one of the larger counties in the state of Minnesota, is currently in the process of reporting this information on its website. So far, and they have not met the details required by this bill, they have invested 100 staff hours. They anticipate expending at least another 100 to 200 staff hours to totally complete the reporting that they're going to do. It's going to go beyond this bill. But that's a county that has a $200 million budget. Again, they have the dedicated staff that in both the web publishing, the public information side, as well as the financial, to be able to put this information together and post it on their website. The smaller entities simply don't have that wherewithal.
Representative Barrett.
Just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. So that's what I'm interested in, is the 100 hours and to what extent. Well, what does that go to? Does that go to producing a report or creating new general ledger accounts? I'm trying to understand the nature of the burden in a county or a city, regardless of size. Where does the burden reside, in producing the report or creating something that doesn't currently exist?
Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, Representative Barrett, you know, quite frankly, I'd suggest a better way to approach this is to ask the state auditor to put together recommendations with consultations with city and county officials to come up with a manner that they can meet with the minimum of expenditure of additional staff resources and cost rather than trying to force this mandate on them. Again, we already do extensive financial reporting. The compensation data is already provided. It's simply not published. If that's the factor that we want to do, all you have to do, again, is just require the state auditor to report it. Okay. She already has it.
Just want to keep in mind we have a number of bills up today. Quick question, Representative McDonald.
Quick comment, Madam Chairman.
All right.
My concern with the bill is this, that I know that some cities and counties already do the audit and do the budget and are very transparent and disseminate the information and get it out to the people. I know, for example, of the 10 years that I served on the city council, we were very transparent in all of our budgeting. We had it on our website, we had it in the newspaper, we published it on in the towns. It's up to the citizen as well. The citizen has a responsibility too. You can have the cities and require the cities and the counties to do all this mandates and get all the information out, but the citizen has a responsibility as well. And so my concern is this is the bill that it's because of some of the cities are already doing this information, that now here we come into the state and say, well, we don't know if you're doing it, and if you are doing it, we're not sure how you do it, but we wanted to do it our way, what we think is best. And so I'm concerned that we're treating cities and counties all the same and, you know, having some unfunded mandates and extra work that is unnecessary.
Right.
So that's my concern with the bill, and I hope I'm willing to work with Representative Downey that we can hopefully address some of my concerns. And if I'd like to hear from Representative Downey regarding that.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments maybe to respond to Representative McDonald's question and maybe some of the other comments that were made here. And your specific question, I think, revolves around the burden here. And, I mean, my understanding is that every unit of government is already producing this information, typically in a much more voluminous fashion, both to the Secretary of State and for their own truth and taxation hearings. So, I mean, in my mind, I cannot in any way envision that this is somehow an increase on what they're already doing. And if they can't produce this one piece of paper, they don't have the staff to do that, I have no idea how they're preparing their budget. I mean, you cannot do budgeting if you don't have this information somewhere. And every website and every report that I've looked at, it's there. It's just buried and it's sliced and it's diced in 100 different ways that the average person can't understand. And with regard to the Anoka County example, I went and took a look at their website. And actually what they have is they have an online SQL drill down query embedded into their website that goes into a data warehouse of their financial system. So that is that's the nuclear submarine. It's way more than what this is asking for. And so I think to use the Anoka County capability, which they've developed on their own, not in an attempt to be compliant with this, is not even close to a fair comparison. So I don't know if I've addressed your question, Representative McDonald. The timing issue is a legitimate one. And you'll note that I already amended the bill on lines 6.28 and 6.29 to indicate that for the look-forward year, given that they have certified their levy by September 15th but maybe not finalized all the particular program and expenditure details, that all they have to report is the aggregate. They don't have to report all the detailed items for the look-forward year. And I'm amenable to continuing to work on that timing concern as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And we'll go on to Ms. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'll be very brief given Keith's extensive testimony on this bill today. First of all, we want to just be on record saying we have no problem.
Do you want to introduce yourself, please, Ms. O'Rourke?
Yes. Thank you. I'm Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities. We're the statewide association with cities here at the Capitol. We want to be on record letting you know we do not have any problems with the transparency goals of this particular legislation. We started meeting with NIOP and the Minnesota Taxpayers Association last summer and invited them into our policy committee to have some good back and forth over this idea as it came up last spring. We do need to be on record voicing our opposition to this bill in its current format. As Keith illustrated, and a lot of you have picked up on, for some, this will be an unfunded mandate of sorts. We passed around a two-pager, if you will, and one page of that outlines all of the reporting requirements that cities currently have, reports that go to the State Auditor's Office and the Department of Revenue. I would just highlight for you that over the last 5 or 10 years, as mandates has been an issue with LGA cuts and what have you, that it's been very difficult for us, as well as a lot of you, to get any traction on true mandate relief. And Representative Crawford carried a bill last year that has certainly been pared down to, and I think it's only a county bill at this point. We've been able to, but I just wanted to highlight that for you because there are a number of reporting requirements already out there. If this idea is to go forward, I know the author and I know NIOP has expressed interest in trying to help us move forward on maybe repealing some of those particular mandates, so I think that's something we're going to be exploring more in depth in the days to come. And one or two ideas I just wanted to leave for you in terms of this bill. Because of the mandate issue and because of the long list of reporting requirements that already exist, you might want to think about a sunset date for this if it is to go forward. As I stated before, it's been very hard to peel back any of those reporting requirements. And then the second thing that's stapled onto that document is a letter I received from the City of Crystal that I thought did a very good job of explaining the difficulties they have in providing a shared service. It's Crystal and New Hope. They do some shared services with fire department services, and what their finance director went through in trying to compare costs with area cities and populations of around 50,000 in delivering those services. As you all know, particularly you with local government experience, cities and counties of different sizes and statures do things different ways, whether it's with volunteer fire departments or paid on-call firefighters, then there's just a lot of difficulties in getting to the bottom of some of those numbers. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Ms. O'Rourke. Any questions of Ms. O'Rourke? Representative Benson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. O'Rourke, I've got this letter from the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, and they indicated a number of objections as well. I don't know if you would be competent to respond just to the general questions that they have.
I can certainly try. I
believe you, they're in the room, Chair, as well. Well, one of them has to do with this issue of the suggestion that the deadline is unworkable. Do you have a response to that, the September 30th deadline that's in the legislation?
Ms. O'Rourke?
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, I've never been a city finance director myself. I know the bill in its current format has a lot of issues and problems with it just because of the property tax timeline that you referred to. That's something that, as we've shopped this out to our members, we've gotten a lot of questions on and concerns from folks. I know the bill calls for 4 years of reporting and information that the advocates would like to see, and it's not all available necessarily.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Benson?
The second question, or the second objection they have, is that this is a one-size-fits-all and therefore makes the reporting very difficult, and I think that is echoed in this letter from the Crystal City. Do you have anything to add to that notion?
Ms. O'Rourke?
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I was glad that they included that in the letter. I mean, we've heard from cities of various sizes, but some of the smaller cities under 2,500 are excluded from this. It might be, so you might want to consider a new threshold if this bill is to move forward, whether that's to exempt out another level or two or cities.
And then the last
Representative
item,
Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last one, the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities letter also suggests that this kind of reporting is now and has been outdated and is no longer relevant. Do you have anything to add to that argument that they make? And if you don't, I'd like to ask the author how he responds to the notion that this is reporting is now outdated and that they had abandoned it decades ago.
Maybe Representative Downey, do you want to respond?
I'm not sure if I fully understand the question, Madam Chair, but I'll do my best. I mean, my sense is if this kind of reporting is outdated that I'm requiring, then this absolutely is outdated, because this is what we're asking them to do today. And this is part of what we're talking about in these mandates. And so I think replacing this, which has extremely limited value to the average citizen, with this, which I think has extremely high value to the average citizen, I don't see how that's either an increase in the level of effort or somehow proposing an onerous burden or somehow creating confusion and presenting information that's not of value or somehow out of date. In fact, I think this would be a vast improvement and an advancement on the information we're providing people, not somehow a step backward.
All right. Representative Benson.
Thank you for your indulgence here. I'm just wondering if a representative from the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities is here today and could respond to that last item.
We are not here, Representative Benson.
They're not here.
No.
Thank you.
Okay.
They are.
I see. And we do have a gentleman. Good morning, sir. Can you give us some brief comments?
Yes.
Please introduce yourself for the
Madam Chair, Charlie Bandarati with Metro Cities, the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. In the letter this morning from our Executive Director, Patricia Nauman, she does address the letter from Crystal as far as looking at the example of cities that maybe share services right now and how an apples-to-apples comparison would be difficult considering some cities fully fund services and some cities share.
Right. Thank you. Does that do it, Representative Vinson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm just curious about the comment that this type of reporting is something that they had abandoned decades ago and that the practice is outdated, no longer relevant to actual city budget preparation and management. I didn't understand exactly why it would be or what the basis of that statement would be.
Representative Benson, we want to have a longer discussion on this bill, so we are going to hold it over, possibly till this evening, possibly till next week. So at that time, perhaps we can have comments and responses to your question.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So at this point, unless there are further questions of the testifiers, we will hold this bill over. And let's see. So we'll hold over House File 1954. Till a further meeting. Thank you very much. We're going to go on to House File 2161, Representative Nornes. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, for working us into your busy schedule.
Absolutely. And I will move for you House File 2161. And please go ahead and give us an explanation of it.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll be as brief as I can, and we have the mayor of Burgess with us this morning, so I'll let him speak to you, too, for a few minutes. This House file basically provides for the city of Burgess, and I need to emphasize, in Otter Tail County, we have a Fergus and we have a Burgess, so this is Burgess with a B. And this would allow the city of Burgess to impose a tax on aggregate that's in their city. Proceeds from the tax would be used to use for roads, bridges, or to also reclaim the quarry after it's exhausted. That's essentially what it is. Several years ago, in 2008, a similar bill was passed to benefit a township in my county, Scambler Township. So at this time, I'd like to have Mayor Harstick explain a little bit about the need for this tax.
Very good. Mayor Harstin, is it?
Harstick.
Harstick. All right. Please introduce yourself for our committee.
I'm Dean Harstick from the mayor of the city of Burgess. I wish to address Honorable Madam Chairman and members of the county committee. Some of our concerns is we have probably two minor gravel pits that were abandoned in the past that are just an eyesore and probably grown up the trees and kind of worthless for anything. We kind of want to avoid having that again. We also, there's a negative aspect of having the gravel pit rather than having your rolling hills to observe the lake and stuff that's now leveled off flat. The other thing is we want to make sure that we have money lined up for the reclamation in those areas to keep our city looking the way it should. There's always use for money as far as Representative Norda said, as far as the road and stuff, you always can make improvements on that, like every other community does.
Madam Chair, again, emphasizing this is an option for the City of Virgis to offer the tax. That will be up to their discretion once it's approved. I guess at this point, there's questions. We'll try to address them.
Other questions, members of the author? Okay. Seeing none, then, what we want to do is pass this bill on to taxes, and it'll become part of the, for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. So hearing no further discussion, all in favor signify. Oh, we do have a testifier. Pardon me. Okay. Please come forward, and welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Fred Corrigan. I'm Executive Director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota. We're a statewide organization. We're opposed to this bill, but I want to make clear that we support the county option tax that is in place in the state of Minnesota. The Legislative Task Force looked at this in 1999 and 2000. Passed legislation in 2008 that increased the tax rate from 7 to 15 cents per ton, and also increased the local share of that revenue to 42.5%. We recognize that these operations can have an impact on local government, and through the county-imposed tax, provided the revenues to accomplish the taxes that needed to be done. That legislation also prohibited local option taxes, and we would consider this to be a local option tax. It also gave the auditor of the county up to 5% to compensate the auditor's work in auditing this operations. This bill is based on an exemption given to 10 townships in surrounding Duluth and St. Louis County in 1984 when the initial aggregate tax statute was passed. Only one of those townships is currently imposing the tax, which has greatly distorted the Duluth construction market and forced adjoining townships, cities, and the state, as well as private contractors, to pay a tax on materials from this township only while it is not imposed in the surrounding townships. We would like to work with the committee to clarify language in this statute, especially the act as the county provision that's in the statute. In our experience, local government does not have the staff or resources to ensure the tax is collected and allocated according to the statutes. The Minnesota Association of Townships are neutral on this tax because of the winners and losers that result from local collection of this tax. Cities have the permit authority to recover costs to local system and require reclamation. Our members would argue that the county is equipped to reclaim pits that have been abandoned and recognize the fact that the county is best equipped to collect and oversee this tax through the county auditor. We would ask the committee to confirm the county option for the imposition of this tax and oppose this bill at the local level. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Corrigan. Representative Nornes, is the county currently levying a tax then on aggregate? And
they
have the opportunity.
Madam Chair.
Why not?
The County of Otter Tail is not and is not interested in doing that. That's why in 08, Scambler Township is given the same authority. And so the same is true now. The county has no interest. I talked to a county commissioner who at one time was the chair of the Scambler Township Board, and he assured me that the county is not interested in doing that.
Okay. Is that referenced in your bill then, that that you know, in lieu of the county tax?
Madam Chair, if the county decides they want to levy the tax, mm-hmm. they would then this would then be null and void.
Okay. All right. Are there questions of the witness? Okay. Well, I think what we'd like to do, though, is go ahead and move this to taxes. So if there's no further discussion, we'll go ahead and take a vote. All those in favor of moving House File 2161 to taxes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. Bill is passed to taxes. Thank you, Representative. We're going to take up next House File 1113. Representative McFarland, and wonder if we could make this quite brief. We don't need lengthy testimony, although I know you're fully capable. Good morning, Representative McFarland. I will move House File 1113 for you. Please go ahead and okay. Tell us about the bill.
House File 1113 repeals the expiration date of 12/31/12 for the Mortgage and Deed Taxing Authority for Ramsey County. I have with me today Ramsey County Commissioner Janice Rettman, and I think she could probably speak to this as well. We'll have to remind her about your time frame, I think, because she's very passionate.
Exactly. Nice passion, however. Good morning, Commissioner. How are you?
I am good. Madam Chair, Honorable Chair, and Representatives, I very rarely come
Please
to...
Please introduce yourself for the...
My name is Janice Rettman. I'm a member of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners and Chair of the Housing Redevelopment Authority for Ramsey County. I very rarely come down here, and so this is a treat for me, and so I appreciate it. On behalf of the... I'm also joined with the HRA staff are here if we have specific questions. On behalf of Ramsey County Board, we are respectfully asking to continue to use the ERF, the Environmental Response Fund, in the manner that the original legislation intended. This original legislative language stated the following: the county shall seek matching funds from contaminated cleanup funds, the private sector, and any other sources. In order to carry out that intent and spirit of the legislation, the Ramsey County Board and staff did not impose a fee until we were ready with the specifics. The Ramsey County ERF dollars are the last end dollars to a project where all private and other cleanup dollars are already secured, and the developer has site control and dollars are ready to be used to make the property create full-time jobs that are long-term jobs or housing and increase the tax base. Number two, the ERF dollars would only be used for environmental cleanup gap. The administration of the ERF would be kept to a minimum and is right now less than 1%. The ERF dollars would split 50-50 as equally as possible between the suburbs and the city of St. Paul. At your seat, you already have a copy of this as well as letters of support. In the legislation, and I'm just going to give you one more detail. In the legislation, the first priority identified was a St. Paul site known as the Max and Steel Dale Street Shops, located between Como, Dale, Front, Minnehaha, and Western Streets on the two sides of the Great Northern Corridor. The legislation stated this land was blighted and cleanup will lead to living wage jobs and improve the land for economic development. I will gladly take you there anytime because I'd love to show you what that property looks like now. The updated information, the private real estate investment on these two sites totaled over $27.5 million. 15.8 plus $450,000 equipment investment on the previously tax-forfeited Max and Steel site, and 11.875 plus $450,000 for equipment was invested on the Dale Street Shops. On the Max and Steel site, the development saved 355 jobs, and in the first 10 years will add 200 new jobs. 70% will come from the neighborhoods. On the Dale Street side shops, 260 jobs were saved and 130 new jobs will be created. Jobs were saved and 130 new jobs will be created during that first 10 years. Ramsey County believes without the ERF we could have not achieved this success. I believe the ERF charge has lived up to being about jobs, to adding tax base, and increased market value. We are what we're most proud of in Ramsey County is that all of the municipalities have been able to see the ERF at work in their communities. I guarantee you and personally know the impact it has had on the North End, South Como, and Frogtown communities. The legislation is not an end-all, believe-all, but I believe with all my heart that this tiny part of the mortgage deed registration fee is the working fee that does exactly what you want and we wanted to do in Ramsey County, create jobs and housing and a good tax base. We respectfully request you rescind the sunset and remove it, and thank you very much for your time, and I stand ready for questions if you have them.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, there are questions of the witness or the representative? Okay. Very nice job. And seeing no further discussion, we'll take the vote. All those in favor of passing 1113 on to taxes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed, same sign.
Thank you.
Okay. Bill passes. Okay. We'll move on to House File 1242. And Representative Depke's bill, and I believe she has someone here and her substitute to present it. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm Peter McLaughlin. I'm the co-chair of the Intergovernmental Committee and a member of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners. Madam Chair, thank you very much. Representative Depke is snowed in, as I understand it, and but sends her regards. This bill is similar to the Ramsey County bill. We are requesting a maintenance of the status quo, which is essentially the allowing us to continue to collect the mortgage registry and deed tax, which has been in place since 1997. What we have done with this tax is just as they've done in Ramsey County. We've cleaned up polluted land. We've made investments in 24 cities across Hennepin County. There are 4,300 additional sites potentially in Hennepin County that could be subject to cleanup in the past. And what we're doing is cleaning up the practices of the 20th century so that there can be 21st century investment by the private sector. On the properties in which we've invested environmental response fund, we've had a 12-to-1 return on property values increases. So for every dollar we've invested in environmental response fund money, we've had $12 increase in the values of the property. It's a good rate of return. We think this is the direction we need to go because it elicits private sector investments on properties that otherwise couldn't get private sector investment because of the pollution on the land. So we're asking for our legislation, a 5-year extension of our authority to impose the mortgage registry and deed tax and to proceed with the environmental cleanup. Again, a 12-to-1 return on the investment that's been made through this fund, and it's across the county. 24 cities have had investment so far, and there are sites within every city within the county. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. Just wanted to clear up, what does it raise then every year?
It depends upon the volume of real estate mm-hmm. transactions, obviously, but the range has been in the $2 to $4 million range annually, depending on on what the real estate transactions are.
And no matter what size of property then, it's just the transaction itself, $30 flat?
No, it's a function of the value of the property. There's a formula that's applied to the value, and it's on a $150,000 property. It would be on the order of $30
right
at the time of the transaction. Madam Chair, we have Mayor Reel of Excelsior here who stayed overnight to make sure you got here this morning.
Oh, very good. Hope you enjoyed your stay, Mayor Reel. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Nick Reel, and I'm the mayor of Excelsior. And whereas there is a 12-to-1 return on investment on the private sector, I would say the investment on the public sector is priceless. So thank you very much. The City of Excelsior has been the beneficiary of receiving ERF monies. And for the City of Excelsior, this started in 2006 and 2007 when the Hennepin County approached us as they were looking at dump sites. And in the 1950s, there was an active dump site in Excelsior on County Road 19. And it became, they covered it up in the end of the decade of the 50s. And it sat for many, many years And in when the Hennepin County approached us and we started working with them, we were quite anxious about what we might find there. There was a phase one environmental that moved on to a phase two environmental, and of course what we found was considerable methane gas and other obvious contaminants from the dump site. Well, the city was hesitant, anxious going into this, because whereas there was discussion of available funds for cleanup, there was no guarantee. And once you start this process, you don't know where it's going to lead. Fortunately, there were funds available, and so the remediation of this, the venting of this old dump site, and the trenching and venting, and subsequent additional cover to add back onto the dump site in order to make it safe for the residents and businesses surrounding the area, was the remediation of this was just expensive, and we were very, very fortunate to be able to have the funds available from the county to partner with us in creating a safe park where we were able to clean up the mess. Now, I might mention that there is still ongoing venting and monitoring of this. We are finding that we do have in a couple of areas excessive methane gas that is still coming from the dump site, and this may need some additional work into the future. So we do have without these funds, the cost of the whole remediation and where we are today is in the neighborhood of the a levy for a full year for us. It's about $1.25, $1.3 million that has been spent in this cleanup. This would have been impossible for us to achieve without significant hardship. I would just encourage the continuation of this these funds, availability of these funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions of the witness? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Do have someone here in opposition, Mr. Lake.
Madam Chair, we have one other quick witness, if that's
oh, I'm sorry. All right.
That's from Dominion Development.
Please come forward. Your name, please, and
Madam Chair,
who you
committee
represent.
Members, thank you. My name is Owen Metz. I'm with Dominion Development and Acquisition. We're a local real estate owner and manager of apartments. We own about 6,000 apartments in the state of Minnesota. We have two current projects going with DRF funding in Hennepin County in the city of Minneapolis. Both were vacant buildings, are vacant buildings, and we're cleaning up the buildings and adding them to the tax roll. For every dollar in our projects, between $70 and $100 is leveraged to private investment, so it's a very strong tool and provides a very great benefit to these projects. We're creating approximately 400 units of affordable workforce housing, so it'll create construction jobs and long-term jobs for employees of the site. So just want to I'll be very brief, but just want to thank you for your hopeful support of this and passing this extension, and I will be able to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a quick question. In some of these contaminated areas, was any TIF districts established to help develop these areas?
TIF is hard to get in Minneapolis. One of the two we're hoping to get TIF on. It's in the process. We've got the ERF funding awarded, but we don't have TIF approved at this point.
Senator McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A follow-up then, in any of the Hennepin County areas, was there contaminated areas in your that were TIF money was established, TIF districts?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, I don't have that information at my disposal. My guess would be that there would be some which are the TIF district was created, but we can get that information back. I don't have that information at my disposal.
All right, thank you. Any other questions of the witness? If not, thank you very much. And we do have both Mr. Lake, is it, and Mr. Azier to testify in opposition. Good morning. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lake. Who's going to go first? Okay. Mr. Azier, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors. I had indicated to the committee staff that I testify at the conclusion of the second bill to conserve the committee's time and understanding that the discussion will continue in the full tax committee. But I just did want to provide a few brief comments. You heard a lot of really good testimony from the counties regarding the work that's being done using their environmental response funds. But the issue that I'd like you to also consider is the tax policy of where the revenue comes from. And in this specific case, for these two counties, they use an additional portion that they add on to the mortgage registry and deed taxes, actually two taxes. And that's how the environmental response funds are funded, and that's how the work is currently taking place. We have a concern, and we've traditionally opposed singling out a small subset of the population, in this case buyers and sellers, to pay the cost for activities that are clearly a benefit to all the residents of Hennepin and Ramsey counties. I think the success stories that you have in fact sheets provided by the counties tell great stories, but they're certainly stories that show that these projects don't just benefit the people paying the tax, they benefit everyone who lives in those two counties. And so for those of you on the full tax committee, and as this issue continues, we'd just like you to keep in mind that the tax policy issue, in addition to the work that's currently being funded through the Environmental Response Fund. And I'll leave my comments there, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Mr. Lake, did you have comments?
Madam Chair, my name is Kevin Dunleavy, and I co-chair the Real Property Section Legislative Committee for the State Bar Association.
If you could say your name again, please, maybe spell it.
Kevin Dunleavy, D-U-N-L-E-V-Y.
Okay, thank you.
This bill is against the public policy that the Bar Association Real Property Section has been advocating for many years, and that is uniform recording fees. In 2005, we were able to have the legislature pass a uniform recording fee. These recording fees in Ramsey County and Hennepin County are the only non-uniform recording fees in the state. The result of that is when documents are sent for recording, they're oftentimes rejected for recording because of the non-uniform nature of these taxes. A case where that occurred is the Raven Trading case. Citizens State Bank had a mortgage. It was sent for recording. It didn't have the right mortgage registry tax on it. It was rejected for recording. And then the Raven Trading mortgage got priority. And Raven is actually a pretty apt name for that creditor because there was ample indication that it wasn't a good faith purchaser of the property. These problems that are caused because of the non-uniform recording fees, I wouldn't be surprised if they exceed the revenue that's collected under these two bills. There is a purpose for the sunset in these bills. These taxes were only intended to be temporary. They're not intended to be taxes forever. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any question of the witness? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Penlevy. I didn't understand how we don't have uniform taxes in terms of property tax levies and sales tax rates, and I mean we kind of have a state policy in all kinds of different areas of having some differences. And I know the law profession deals with lots and lots of complexity. It's confusing to me to see how a 0.0001 addition and calculating an amount to be transferred couldn't be handled by a real estate settlement lawyer, and to the point that it would cause the problems that you've illustrated, and perhaps you need to better clarify the issue for me.
Mr. Dunleavy.
Madam Chair, in every county of the state, I can calculate the deed tax and a mortgage registry tax very easily. But in Hennepin County and Ramsey County, I have to look it up every time. And that, I think, is probably true of every closing in the state that has to do with property in Hennepin County and Ramsey County. The chances of a mistake is increased many times because of that lack of uniformity. Does that answer your question?
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I just don't see it as quite that big a problem because they're both the exact same rate, and they're 0.0001 of the principal amount of the mortgage loan. Mm-hmm. and the same rate is applied to the mortgage deed tax. And so it seems to me a pretty simple calculation. Yes, you have to look into what property, which county the property is in, but I'd say for a tax situation that has been in place for all these years, it somehow has been worked out. And so I'm just thinking that this is perhaps not as complicated as it might appear based on that witness's testimony, because it has worked out for millions of property transfers, I suspect, over the time it's been imposed in both of our two largest counties.
All right, any further questions? All right, seeing none, then we will proceed to the vote on House File 1242 and moving it to taxes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Bill passes. Thank you. We'll take up one more bill here today, members. Representative Mahoney, House File 1876. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1876. I want to thank you because this political professional sitting next to me was a little worried about having to come back a little later this evening. So.
Well, we know how you like evening meetings.
Madam Chair, this is a simple bill, but my testifier, Sarah Erickson, has put a lot of energy into preparing her testimony, so I'll just turn it over to her.
Very good. Ms. Erickson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. I will be very brief. House File 1876 in front of you is this the City of St. Paul's Capital Improvement Budget, or our CIB program. This program allows us to bond for publicly owned infrastructure projects in the city, police stations, fire stations. For example, we've used it previously for community warning siren system, for Fire Station 22 edition. We've used it for Central Corridor. We've had this authority since 1971, and it sunsets every 10 years, and it is expected to sunset in 2013. The bill before you asks for two changes. One is an extension of the authority for an additional 10 years, and the second is an increase of the amount of the bonding authority from $20 million to $30 million. The authority has been at a $20 million since 2003. This change will help facilitate updates to critically needed community buildings and public safety assets. And if there are any questions, I will stand for them.
Very good. Any questions of the witness or the author? Okay. Well, seeing none, we'll move then to take House File 1876 and pass it along to Taxes Committee. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Great. Bill passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our meeting is, we are in recess until further calling.
Members,